Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. The COVID-19 pandemic is having an unprecedented impact on our region. Thousands of people are out of work and hundreds of businesses have shuttered. Schools are closed. It would be easy to throw up our hands in frustration as we navigate through the many obstacles that this health crisis has thrown our way. But some organizations in our region are stepping up. They're helping people, businesses, and organizations cope during this turbulent time. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seewert. When the coronavirus pandemic emerged in our region, we launched what we thought would be a two-part series devoted to the COVID-19 situation. But since this crisis continues to develop and has taken over so much of our lives, we've decided to expand the series to four programs, each with a unique focus. Last week, we talked about the science that led to the governor's Safer at Home order. This week, we're discussing the ways three area organizations are reaching out to help ease the burden for the people and businesses of North Central Wisconsin. Joining us today, Sue Nelson, the program officer for the Community Foundation of North Central Wisconsin. Sue, welcome to Route 51.
Well, thank you for letting me tag along today on your road trip, Shireen.
Absolutely.
Thank you for inviting us to be part of this.
We also welcome Lauren Beckett, the Executive Director of the Rhinelander Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for being here, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Our third guest today is Greg Wright, the Executive Director of Create Portage County. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thank you very much.
So what questions do you have for our guests? Email questions to route51@wpr.org or join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. If you call, make sure you let the phone ring for a good long time. We need that extra time for technical reasons. So Sue, let's start with you. I know that almost immediately after this crisis emerged, the Community Foundation joined forces with the United Way of Marathon County for a new grant program. So can you explain how that started? And tell us just a little bit about that.
Sure. As a staff, and I'm sure the staff at the United Way as well, we really were kind of monitoring what was going on with the COVID-19 pandemic around the world, knowing that eventually it would creep its way into our community. So we've been thinking for several weeks, thanks to some of our staff members, about how we would handle that. So setting up the fund, was the easy part of it. From there, getting the partnership with the United Way was the perfect match on a program like this between the two organizations. We just have such a pulse on the community, both with the donor community that is out there, as well as the nonprofits and the needs that they would be seeing in the next couple weeks and months going forward. So we set up the fund several weeks ago. Started that partnership with the United Way. Both the United Way and the Community Foundation each invested $25,000 in the fund as seed money to get that going. From there, we had conversations of once we have some money, once we start building that fund up, how are we going to get that spent back into the community? We developed the online application quite quickly. It's a very short application for nonprofits to fill out that are feeling some stress right now. And we have a review committee that meets twice a week to look at those applications and get that money mobilized into the community quite quickly.
Great. And we'll ask you some specifics about that in just a little bit as well. Lauren, you're the executive director of the Rhinelander Chamber of Commerce. I just got an email a few minutes ago from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that says there's a MetLife poll out, a chamber MetLife poll that says one in four small businesses are on the brink of permanent closure. What are you hearing from small businesses in your area? And what kind of challenges are they facing?
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting climate here in the Rhinelander area. We did also survey our members, and many of them are small businesses. And we are hearing that as well. There are several that are very nervous about having to permanently close with the safer at home order in place and them being deemed non-essential. but we are trying to do everything that we can to help them avoid permanent shutdown.
Greg, you're working with the Portage County Economic Recovery Team. Is that a new entity, or is that something that's been around for a while?
Oh, yeah, it's a brand new initiative that was started by initially the city of Stevens Point, the economic development director there. But it is a coalition of various partners in Portage County that are all working together to try to make sure that we have both the immediate supports that businesses need to stay the course in this time, but also so that we provide long-term support for however this ends up affecting the economy.
Greg, how many partners are involved on that team?
So there are 9 organizations that are a part of that, ranging from municipal organizations to nonprofits.
Okay. Sue, going back to you, sure. You've had a chance to take a look at applications from different organizations. You've been speaking with business leaders in the area. How much of the local economy, at least here in Marathon County, has been affected by this pandemic?
That's actually hard for us to really get a pinpoint on those kind of specific numbers, but we are getting a huge request from the nonprofit community to help serve those immediate vital needs, and that's really where our concern is right now, is to make sure that people have food in their pantries and that they are able to stay in their homes by providing shelter and utility stipends. Childcare has seemed to be a huge issue. Those people that are still able to go to work to have a safe place for their children to be is important. Safety issues with people being in their homes is huge as well. And also to continue to provide that health care that they need in this time of stress.
So those are some of the biggest needs that you're really seeing in those kinds of areas, the child care, the health care,
right.
You know, getting, yeah, okay.
Yeah. The fund itself is really designed to help those most vulnerable populations, and we are finding with the requests that we are seeing, it really is the children and the senior populations. We're starting to see more and more with people that are being laid off and the need for utility stipends and help with their rent to keep them in their homes in this time. That's the new element that we're starting to see within the last week or so.
Okay. Lauren, you had said that primarily the Chamber in Rhinelander is trying to assemble resources, as many as possible, for local businesses. I know that you've created a community resources page on your website. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we met with several organizations, including the health department, our municipality, the healthcare systems in our area, to create a community resource page. And it includes information from the health providers, business guidance in terms of what businesses can try to do during this time, but then it also includes those resources to the Small Business Administration for potential financial assistance. Our local United Way, much like Marathon County there, has created a fund, so we link off to that. WEDC has a lot of resources, our school district, our college, so we have tons of links. But then it also includes the businesses that have made updates and changes during this time, so restaurants that are still offering takeout, businesses that have adjusted hours or are doing appointment only or over the phone, how you can vote absentee. So it's got a lot of resources on there that we link off to different pages.
So kind of a one-stop shop for people to get information about what's happening then.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're doing some emails too, emailing out some information?
We try 2 to 3 times a week. We're emailing out information to our members as well as to the community through our different e-newsletter systems that has information about potential financial relief, updates from our municipality, updates from our health department, any information that we think that our businesses need, we've been trying to forward as much as possible.
Okay. And Greg, I know you've been communicating directly with the Department of Revenue and WEDC to help them understand what entrepreneurs and small businesses are needing in terms of support programs. So what are some of the major messages that you're sharing with those entities?
Sure. One of the first things we heard right away from small business owners that we talked to as soon as this crisis started was a concern for their employees. You know, people really want to do what they can to make sure their employees stay employed and supported through this crisis. And so right away, we started communicating with the Department of Revenue and their business liaison, and again, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, about that particular interest in seeing programs that come out that would help them keep payroll going through this stretch of time. The other big thing we're just saying to all small businesses, entrepreneurs, other people seeing economic consequences, is pay really close attention to what you wish existed to support you at this time. Share that information with us. They can do so. We also have a website called PortageEconRecovery.org, and there's a form on there where people can fill out what they wish was existing to support them at this time. And again, then we can take that information and share it with partners at the state who are helping to design those programs. I think the one big thing that we've heard from the state on this is that they also are doing this for the first time. This is a brand new experience for them. And the more information they get about what people are experiencing, the more they can craft and tailor the programs they're creating to make sure that businesses are getting the support they need.
I think it's really interesting that you're doing that you're inviting people to kind of give this wish list and let the powers that be, if you will, kind of see through the eyes of the people who really need this assistance. How's the response been? Pretty good?
Very, very much so. I mean, I literally have the business liaison for the Department of Revenue's phone number in my phone right now. It's been amazing how responsive the state has been to us communicating this information. But again, they know that this is a new world for everybody. And so they understand how valuable it is to have real-time information. And I think, you know, one of the examples I can give for that is historically unemployment programs have been for people who are in usually businesses of more than three employees. There's this growing world of independent contractors and freelancers. You know, now they say it's about a third of the economy that falls into that space that does not qualify historically for unemployment programs. Well, there was so much information shared when unemployment programs were first announced for this that particular demographic needed to be included, that they actually changed the rules for unemployment so that particular group of people can receive benefits at this time too. And so it's that kind of information. Again, if you're a small business owner or entrepreneur or a freelancer or something along those lines, and you're experiencing something where you have information that says, you know, this program would be even better if it was like this instead of like this, that there's an openness right now from the state in hearing that information and adjusting these programs to meet that need.
Well, it's great to hear about the responsiveness, that's for sure. Lauren Sackett, Greg Wright, and Sue Nelson are our guests today. It's the second of four programs on the COVID-19 outbreak and the impact on our region. We have to take a break, but when we return, we'll have more about efforts underway to keep businesses and people connected with necessary services and programs during this time. You can join the conversation, too. You call 800-780-9742. If you call, make sure you let the phone ring. We need a little extra time to answer those phones these days. You can also email questions to route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward, and this is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Greg Wright, Sue Nelson, and Lauren Sackett are here today as we continue our discussion on community outreach in the COVID-19 pandemic. We'd like to hear from you, too. Email us at run@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. We had an email from a listener, Doug in Wausau, who was talking about his son and future daughter-in-law who had to cancel their wedding. And much of what they paid for various services is in limbo. A lot of money is already spent, he mentioned the vacation that they're taking, the honeymoon that they planned. It's the money is lost. That made me think about the tourism industry too. And Lauren, I know that the Northwoods is very much reliant on tourism. How is the tourism industry being affected so far?
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely uncharted territory when it comes to the tourism industry right now. I know a lot of the counties up here, Vilas and Oneida County, has kind of issued a please stay at home if you're a second homeowner or thinking about visiting right now, because of our hospital infrastructure up here in the area. But we are starting to have those conversations on what kind of tourism initiatives and things that we can do when we're able to start ramping things up again. But it's certainly been a challenge for the tourism industry and all of those hospitality-like businesses.
I did see the caution from Oneida County officials that asking people with seasonal homes to stay. Is there a sense of really too soon to tell, Lauren?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Oh, sure. I was just talking about the caution from Oneida County asking people with seasonal homes to stay away from the time being. Do you think that there's a sense that this is going to continue for some months, or is it really too soon to tell what's going to happen with that?
I know that the Department of Health Services has kind of put out their caution that this could be a while before it peaks, and before we can start to get a sense of normalcy again. So I think that we're starting to have those conversations on the tourism side of what are we going to do going forward? How are we going to adjust? But I think it's kind of too soon to tell exactly what kind of impact that it'll have exactly.
Sure. Greg, there has to be a pretty significant impact on the creative community. I know that artists, musicians, instructors, some of them are really stepping up to fill the void with virtual concerts and lessons. It's really cool to see. I know you've got this the still sessions going on. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Sure. So obviously one of the biggest things that has affected our operation is what we love to do most is get groups of people together to build community. And so obviously that's quite difficult to do during these times when we can't have groups together and we're encouraging people to stay home. And that has had a really significant economic impact as well, as artists, venues are all shut down right now and can't make revenue. So one thing we decided to do that a lot of artists, if you're watching online, have started to do is to create some live stream programming. So we've done everything. We did a doodle class yesterday. We did a pizza baking class a couple of weeks ago. And then we've done a bunch of live music concerts, trying to engage local artists in the community to live stream through the Create Portage County Facebook page, out content that people can then watch in their homes. And then, you know, there are features on Facebook now that allow you to set up watch parties so you can watch with other people, even though you're not in the same spot, but you can comment and share and talk to each other in that way. But again, we are trying to, the whole concept of the still sessions is both the world is a little bit still right now as we all stay in our homes, but we want to show too that people can still build community together and that we can especially leverage the arts to feel connected to one another during this time.
I'd love to take a look at them. Where can we find them?
So again, we announced those on the Create Portage County Facebook page. Actually, our next one is tonight at 8 o'clock. We're doing a concert with a musician named Sarah Crow. But it's been pretty fast-paced in us announcing those, so our lineup usually gets announced the week of, as this was not something we were expecting. But there's always new musician. We've been talking to a jazz musician that is a UWSP grad who doesn't live here anymore but is going to maybe do some music for us. A couple of other artists and some other arts classes. We've done some yoga programming as well. But if people follow our Facebook page, which is at Create Poco, P-O-C-O, they can get all the information about those concerts.
Oh, great. Thanks for sharing that. It sounds wonderful. And one of the things that you mentioned that I keep hearing the word community, you know, that it's a community effort to stay strong through all of this. And Sue, I'd like to circle back to you, because when you and I talked about this before, you were talking about what a great response you had from donors. Can you, and their sense of community, that it's going to take all of us to get through this. Can you share a little bit about how those conversations went when you talked with donors and had great success in raising funds for this?
Yeah, we actually have had very good success with that. Donors, you know, we have a very generous community, and donors are just looking for a way to make an impact at this time, and many of them not knowing how they could make the greatest impact. The COVID relief fund that was established has offered the opportunity for people to actually pool their money together to make grants in the community that are going to be very, very important to the organizations and to the individuals that we're serving. In our initial week, 2 weeks of collecting funds, our website shows that we have $170,000 raised to date. But we know from conversations that we had yesterday that that number is going to jump by $100,000 by early next week or maybe even by the end of the day today. So we're going to have well over $250,000, probably creeping closer to the $300,000 area. People are just really getting on board. They want to do something, and this is such a simple way to do something that's going to be very, very impactful and very important.
And who is eligible to apply for the grants? Is it just nonprofit organizations?
It is. It's just nonprofit organizations that serve Marathon County. I know that there are United Way and Community Foundation partnerships that are in many communities in the state. I believe that it's happening in Portage County and many other communities in the area where the two organizations are working together. It is any nonprofit serving Marathon County. Again, we are looking for those immediate needs for those vulnerable populations. You know, it's food security. It's getting keeping people in their homes, child care. Safety, access to the health care, we're really looking at those kind of issues right now. We know eventually, the nonprofits are telling us, eventually they're going to need additional funding. We just did another survey with them, what they think their long-term needs are going to be. And most of them are just really trying to keep their feet on the ground right now and do the work they need to do. But there are a lot of fundraising events that nonprofits hold this time of the year, and they're losing tens of thousands of dollars toward their annual budget. And that's going to hurt them. And once they have a chance to really assess that, there's going to be great needs for these organizations just to be able to continue the services that they provide. So we know this isn't a short-term issue. This is going to be a long-term issue that we're going to be looking with for our nonprofits.
Sure. And continuing on with this theme of community togetherness, one of the things, Lauren, that you mentioned in an email to us was that the social media efforts that you have, trying to share these engaging posts for the community members to do while they're safer at home, the virtual Spirit Week. Tell us a little bit about those efforts, if you would please, Lauren.
Yeah, we certainly know that being at home all the time has an impact to our community's mental health. So we are trying to do things that can be fun for the kids that are home from school, the people that are working from home. And we did this week, we are in the middle of the Rhinelander Virtual Spirit Week. Today is Flowery Friday, and we're asking people to share spring photos and what they most love about spring and tag us in those responses. That was one of the efforts we did. We put out a Hodag coloring page that adults or kids can return to us, and we'll share it in an upcoming newsletter. Different things on social media that just kind of keep people together, engaged, and have conversation virtually.
Okay. Craig, one of the things that I've been seeing a lot of buzz about is the effort to supply face shields and other personal protective equipment to healthcare workers. I know Create Portage County is spearheading a big effort here. Can you tell us about that? What's happening and how is this being done?
Sure. And, you know, this is a perfect section of the segment to do it in because it really has been such a community effort. So Create Portage County has a 3D printing facility in our Idea Center, and an innovation center we run normally to help entrepreneurs launch new businesses. And obviously because of the stay-at-home ordinances, we've been changing that particular usage. So we set it up instead to be a production facility for high-need personal protective equipment in, for the medical community. We started with, you know, at the time we had four 3D printers. I believe we have 13 running now with another 10 that are coming today. This is now, there's now a group in Wausau that is also helping to print this for us, but we're printing face shields, and so they look almost like a welder's mask that people wear into surgery to make sure that anything that happens, you know, that the people who are doing the frontline work stay protected. But again, it's been such a community effort, and that's what's been so cool about it. We have elastic donated from people who had just extra elastic laying around their homes. We've had various businesses engage in this. We have, you know, a grant from Marshfield Clinic, a grant from Ascension St. Michael's Foundation. We have Gamber Johnson figuring out how to cut out plastic for us. The Worth Company is cutting the plastic sheets down to a size they need. Politos has donated pizza. And so, it's, you know, this high need became evident in the process of this crisis. And we had all of these different community partners who wanted to be engaged in that in some way. And that's, I think, what's been so amazing about this project is we're not just filling a need. We are filling a need by coming together as a community and all thinking about what we can contribute to this particular cause so that the people on the front lines are as protected as they can be.
I am not super familiar with 3D printing. I mean, I've heard about it a lot, but what items can be produced through 3D printing? It sounds really fascinating.
So anything can be 3D printed. You know, the world of 3D printing is amazing these days. The short version of it is that instead of a printer drawing one line in a two-dimensional way on a sheet of paper, they draw a line for every layer of that first dimension, and then it goes up one notch and it draws all the lines for that next layer. So any 3D object can be printed. You know, it just depends on the materials and the shape and size, the capacity of the printer. But we are particularly printing the headband piece that the plastic shield attaches to, and then a reinforcement piece at the bottom to keep the face shield curved in the way that it's supposed to be. We print those two pieces, and then we attach the plastic to them. We attach some elastic and some foam to make them comfortable, and then we ship them out to frontline hospital workers. And so we actually have those files. If people go to our website, createportagecounty.org, they can access the files we're printing. If you have a 3D printer at home, you can print them and download them and you know, drop off the completed files with us that we can use as well. So we have printers all across central Wisconsin that are contributing to this effort. We actually have learned that our designs, which were designed by two gentlemen that are working out of the Idea Center with us right now, those designs are being used in the UK, in Japan, and in Germany, we know for sure, but potentially other places around the world as well, as this, you know, collective effort of designers and printers have banded together to figure out how to print things. And we're currently working on trying to figure out if we can print an approved face mask as well. We're looking at some ventilator parts. You know, there's some really incredible creative things happening to meet the need right now.
Wow. Are you still
looking? That'll be very fascinating too.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's just really, that is fascinating. Are you still looking for people to participate in this?
Yes. So we're trying to produce as much as we can because we know the need is high now and we're not sure how long the need will last. And so if people do have access to 3D printers at home, they can definitely jump on and start printing. You know, for us, we're trying to meet the need in the region, you know, central Wisconsin immediately, but there are also websites that have popped up in the last couple of days that are helping people connect producers to need. So if we end up producing more than we need in central Wisconsin, what we'll do is we'll advertise that over, you know, the surplus of product on those websites so we can ship it out to other places that are in need.
Okay, great. Sue, I know that that the Community Foundation and United Way have really band together to try to look at needs and fill those. How many grants have you given out so far? And who's receiving them? I know Boys and Girls Club was one.
As of this morning, we just had another meeting this morning. As of this morning, there are 13 organizations that have received funding, some of them including, do you want me to list them all? I've got Blessings in the Backpack, Boys and Girls Club, those are Mission Street, Bridge Street Mission. Those are all food distribution projects. Children's Wisconsin, that application we looked at this morning, I call what we're doing with them desk drawer top drawer money that their counselors and their therapists will be able to provide to families for food needs and things that they see through the conversations they're having with them. Community Center of Hope in the Mosinee area for food distribution. Faith in Action, a smaller but a very strong organization who works mostly with the senior population. They're going to be providing transportation to appointments and things like that, some more food security for that vulnerable population. The Hmong American Center was an interesting proposal because they just needed a way to keep their population, their community informed about COVID and the necessity for the social distancing and the isolation and what the virus is all about. Also providing food and essential items to the people that are homebound. We've done a couple.
It sounds like
The YMCA, we're just so impressed with the work that the YMCA Child Care Center, they closed the centers to the gym and the pool and those kind of things for regular membership so that they could concentrate on providing child care for essential workers in the community. And they've been very creative with the work that they're doing to take as many children as they can and still meet the state guidelines. And they've been doing fantastic work there.
Okay. Well, thank you for giving us an overview. It's interesting to see, just the range of services and really what the needs are that have been identified. Lauren, I know that you're working with the City of Rhinelander and the Emergency Response Team and some asset curation for voluntary isolation centers. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, initially we've been brought into conversations to try to work with some of our local lodgers and set up locations for potential voluntary isolation centers, whether that means like mildly sick patients or healthcare workers that don't want to be going home to their families during this time. So we're trying to work with some of our lodgers to set up facilities that they might be able to utilize. So very initial conversation, but it's part of the emergency response team's plan.
Okay. We do need to take a break. You're listening to Sue Nelson, Lauren Sackett, and Greg Wright in the second of four programs on the impact of COVID-19 in our region. When we return, we'll talk about some more specific community resources and how you can connect as the pandemic continues. What questions do you have for our guests? Call us at 800-780-9742. If you call, be sure to let the phone ring for longer than you normally would have. We just need that a little bit of extra time today. Or email your questions to us at route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Greg Wright, Lauren Sackett, and Sue Nelson are here today as we continue our discussion on the community response to the COVID-19 pandemic. It is the second of four programs dedicated to this ongoing situation, which is having such a profound effect on the people and businesses of our region. Your questions are welcome to email us at route51@wpr.org or call us 800-780-9742. I have to say, as difficult as this time is for everyone, in some ways it seems as though times of crisis kind of bring out the best in people too. Certainly, Sue, what you've shared with us seems to echo that sentiment. I mean, the response seems to have been really positive to your efforts, yes?
It has been, and I know that the need is going to continue out there, and we know that the donors will be there when we need them, but I am just so impressed with the nonprofits that are out there and the work that they're doing as well. They've really had to adjust to some things, most of them working from their homes and still trying to do the work that they need to do with the clients that they need to serve. I've just been extremely impressed with how the community is coming together.
One thing that you shared with me earlier is that the application process is streamlined. It's a very simple application for people, yes?
It is. It is. We took an application and we're basically asking five questions. Give us some information about the need that you're planning to serve. And of course, we're looking for that immediate need. But the one thing that we're finding from the proposals that we're receiving right now, and this would be a little key for anyone that does plan to put in a proposal in the future, we do need a little bit more information on how the money will be spent. So a little bit better breakdown of, you know, is it increased staff? What is the dollar amount on that? Increased supplies, those kind of things. And just a little bit better breakdown on that. But otherwise, the proposal is set up to be as easy as possible. And hopefully they're being as honest as possible. We're doing a real good job. I think we have a good group of people that are reviewing the proposals and they're really looking at the needs. And I think what I like the most about this particular group that's looking at them, between the Community Foundation, who has relationships with the nonprofits, United Way knows what they're currently funding and the needs of their organizations they work with as well. So that's been a beautiful part of that partnership.
Now, we've talked with small business owners who say that they're really happy that small business loans and grants are available, but the process, the application process, and I'm not talking about the Community Foundation and United Way's process, I mean the other aid that's available. The application process is incredibly confusing to some, a lot of red tape. Lauren, I have to ask you, are you hearing that from business owners who say that it's confusing? And what resources would you suggest to help small businesses wade through all of that?
Yeah, we have certainly been hearing that, that a lot of the financial assistance that's out there does have different restrictions in terms of what businesses can apply, how they can apply. One of the recommendations that we've had is that if you can work directly with your financial institution, a lot of the bankers are working to help people submit their applications. And that's been our best suggestion so far, is reach out to your financial institution, see what types of financial assistance you qualify for, and they can help you assist you in that application process.
Okay, so really making those connections with your local lenders, that's important. I have to believe that the impact on the local creative economy that's got to be staggering too. Greg, what are you hearing from local crafters, local artists, and musicians about the financial implications of all of this? I mean, do you see long-term impacts here?
I mean, I think there are a lot of layers to that. Obviously, for people who are going out on any sort of risky creative venture, especially if you're at the beginning of that venture, this time of sitting and wait is really difficult. As I mentioned before, if you're a performing artist of any sort, you can't do your work right now. And the way you can do it is through online channels, but for the most part, those are totally free to the audience. And so revenue streams aren't coming in for those performers as well. Visual artists as well, people aren't going to galleries, people aren't going to shops. They're also seeing their revenue decrease, and so as a result of that, people are spending less of their money on arts programming or entertainment or events, even if they can access it. And so, all of those foundational things are really important. But I've been reading this comment quite a bit online that when you look to what people are turning to in this moment of uncertainty, they're turning to programming. They're watching concerts. They're watching TV shows. They're watching movies. Drawing, they're creating. And so I think the value of the arts as a steady hand in a time like this is really becoming evident, at the same time that we're seeing how hard it is to make people make money in the arts at this time. And so anything you can do, if you are somebody who is doing well financially and you're going to get the stimulus check in a couple of weeks, if there's a piece of art you've been eyeing for a while, now's a great time to buy it. If there's an artist you love, now's a great time to make a contribution or to send them a tip. But it is really difficult for those particular workers as well.
Shireen, can I interject something regarding the
sure.
arts community as well? Do you mind?
Of course.
Okay.
We had
contact with the Wisconsin Arts Board this week, and the Community Foundation is a recipient of what is called the re-granting dollars. And the Wisconsin Arts Board has given us the leeway to use those funds, if we choose to do so, as relief funding for arts organizations that are experiencing some stress right now from ticket sales and programming and things like that that they are unable to fund or to maintain right now. So as of yesterday, we just realigned the community arts grant process through the Community Foundation. We have taken the funding, and our local funding partner on that is the BA and Esther Greenheck Foundation. We thank them very much for their support. And our Community Foundation's West Marathon County Fund, along with the Wisconsin Arts Board, we have a fund between $90,000 and $100,000. We hope we'll be able to pull that together to be a $100,000 community arts grant fund to award grants this year. We're going to use 50% of that for relief and response funding for nonprofit organizations, and the remaining 50% for programming that arts organizations are still going to be able to pull together in the coming year. So I thought that was a great way for the Wisconsin Arts Board to kind of make some changes to affect what is going on in the community right now.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. Lauren, how are our artists performers faring in the Northwest?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? It broke up on my end.
Sure. Sure, I know the technical challenges today are really exceptional with so many people online. But what I had asked is how artists and performers are faring in the Northwoods. So many venues are shut down. How is that going?
We've had some local initiatives out there that have been certainly a way to bring the community together. We have a local artist that has had a storefront downtown that is, like Greg had mentioned, doing some of his art online, but there's also a community member that decided to try to help raise money for the different local small businesses and artists, and have started a version of an online auction. So money that they raise for those items are being in turn given to the artists and the local businesses. So it's definitely interesting, but I think that we partner with WXPR. They've been doing some concert series online. Anything that they can do, the arts is super important in our community, and we're trying to help them navigate how they can make changes.
Sure. And what about summer festivals? I mean, of course, the one that immediately comes to mind is Hodag Country Music Festival in early July. Are there conversations underway about postponing this event, or?
We've had some communities surrounding us that have made the decision to cancel events through July. As of right now, the immediate Rhinelander area has not done anything like that. I know Hodag Country Music Festival has shared recently on their page that they're continuing status quo right now with the hopes that they will be able to continue, but we'll continue to keep an eye out for that kind of information coming forward.
Okay, great. Greg, I know you've got a festival coming up too, a 48-hour film festival filmmaking challenge, and that's, you're making the challenge entirely remote and COVID-19 friendly. So if you can tell us a little bit about that, it would be great.
Yeah, so I mean, that's one of the things that's been sort of a fun challenge, if I can use that phrase, during this time, has been trying to figure out how we can keep doing what we're trying to do. And we do, last year we launched a 48-hour film festival. The way a 48-hour film festival works is that there are restrictions that you have to work into your movie, so a prop, a line of dialogue, a genre, something along those lines that you're assigned at 6 o'clock on Friday, and you have till 6 o'clock on Sunday to make a short film that includes those features that is entirely filmed in that 48-hour period. And so we were planning to do that again this year. We did it live last year, so people were, teams were all working out of our space, and then we did a screening in-house. We realized we could do all this stuff still remotely. So, there are people at home that are looking for fun projects to do. So we decided, instead of bringing people to our space and doing a screening, screening, what we would do instead is encourage people to make films that followed whatever stay-at-home or social distancing requirements were set by your community. So it may just be your family making it. It may be an individual filmmaker making it on their own, but they can then send those films to us, you know, via digital file transfer, and we'll compile them and put them online for people to watch and vote on. So, you know, it was interesting for us, instead of saying, well, we need to cancel this because this is an event of more than 10 people, we instead said, we can find a way to still do this and get people to engage in community building activities while this is happening. You know, and we have a summer music series as well, and we've been talking about, do we live stream those shows when that time comes? Do we ask the artist that's the first week to potentially become the last week, and then just keep doing that until we get permission to no longer follow these social distancing guidelines? You know, I think one of the big things we're trying to pay attention to is that as soon as the social distancing is over, people are going to want to engage in community again. And those events, as people who are event planners out there know, take a long time to plan. And so trying to figure out what we can do so that we're ready as soon as we can go back to something resembling a more normal life, actually have opportunities for community members to get together again and spend time with each other.
That's so important to keep those opportunities there. I am not talented enough to make a film, that's for sure, but I can't wait to see what everybody else comes up with. I have to tell you, my husband is a really social person, and this has been exceptionally difficult for him because he just doesn't have that social connection with other people. And those kinds of online events, for someone who is social like that, is so important and is so healing for him, that it's neat to hear all of these things that are happening to keep people involved and keep people connected during this time. Sue, circling back to you, I'd like to ask you, what more do you think needs to be done? What would you see happen to help support businesses and help support nonprofits in meeting these needs that you're hearing so much about?
Sure. Well, as I said earlier, the needs of the nonprofit world are still being analyzed, and we're learning more every day. But the current needs of people, individuals, is today. So anything that anyone can do to help by giving to the response fund through the Community Foundation, United Way and the Community Foundation will do the best work we can to get the money mobilized where it belongs very quickly. But just kind of keep track of what's going on in your community. Check the United Way and the Community Foundation websites. WASA Pilot and Review offers great information on the COVID situation. Our Chamber of Commerce has great information as well. The Health Department, and we always have United Way's 211 to get information about services that you need. So just stay connected, even though you're in your own home. Stay connected with what's going on in your community.
Thanks. And Lauren, I know that at the Rhinelander Chamber of Commerce, you're really taking this time to plan a comeback, so to speak. So what are you planning for when things finally get back to normal?
Yeah, I think that this is a time where a lot of businesses are looking at ways they can innovate and ways that they can change. So the Chamber is no different. We do host a lot of community events, and we do a lot of programs for our members throughout the year. So we're looking at different types of programs we might be able to offer and different ways that we can do them. To be honest, our chamber has never utilized any type of virtual webinar type series before within our office. We've partnered with other organizations, but maybe now is the time that we can develop some of our own materials. What type of events can we hold in the future that maybe are different? We're just looking at different ways that we can innovate, different marketing campaigns that we might be able to do going forward once we get a little bit of a sense of normalcy again, and taking the time to work internally.
Great. And Lauren, what's the best way to connect with you and the Chamber? Is it the website or Facebook page?
Yeah, our office is closed to foot traffic, but our staff is all working remotely, as I'm sure a lot of chambers are across the state. So the best way to reach us is through our website or our Facebook page, and we're always monitoring our Facebook page, so you can easily send us a message and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Great. Greg, you have so many programs going on, and people might want to participate, and there are a lot of people who want to help and get signed up for some of the things that you're doing. What's the best place to connect with Create Portage County? Is it through the Facebook page or the website?
Either of those works fine. The Facebook page is where we put most of our immediate information, but we try to keep our website updated as well. And anybody who's not on Facebook can find our contact information at createportagecounty.org.
Okay. And we can find the Facebook page just by searching Create Portage County.
Yeah,
so, and Sue, just very briefly, where do folks need to go to either apply or donate for the fund between Community Foundation and United Way?
Sure. We have dedicated our home page on our website to COVID information. So just go to the Community Foundation of North Central Wisconsin. It's cfoncw.org, and you'll find any kind of information you need. United Way also has information on their website as well.
Great. We'll put the websites that the three of you mentioned on our website as well at wpr.org/route51 when we put this program up on our site as well. So I want to thank all three of you for hanging in there and helping your communities and really reaching out to the folks that need your help during this time. So thank you so much, and thank you for being here today.
That's all we have time
for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests one more time, Greg Wright from Create Portage County, Lauren Sackett from the Rhinelander Chamber of Commerce, and Sue Nelson from the Community Foundation. Our executive producer and on-air producer today is Rick Ryer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program and the links we're talking about at wpr.org/route51. Next week, we'll host the third program of our series, this time a discussion on the emotional consequences of the coronavirus outbreak with some coping strategies from a local therapist. Until then, we're heading out of town.